Coach, defense is important, but a team also has to score to win. You can have the best defense in the world, but without an offense to match, you won't be winning any championships. Just have a look at what happened during March Madness this year. Three out of four teams that made it to the Final Four on both the women's and men's side were the top three offensive-ranked teams. That's no coincidence. The reality is most coaches will win more games with a 15% improvement on offense. But how? We're bringing in one of the greatest offensive minds in the game and Read and React creator, Coach Rick Torbett, to help answer that question. On May 9th, Rick and I will kick off our four-week offensive strategies track where we will teach coaches how to score 7 to 10 more points per game. Just head to pgccoaching.com/tracks to learn more.
Welcome to the Harwood Hustle, powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, we discuss the importance of how a coach evaluates their team throughout the season. Specifically, we dive into evaluating games, practices, players, and staff. Before we start, a quick word from Manawatsa.
Coach, would you like to have a team full of great shooters next season? We've partnered with our friends at NOAA to bring to you the Hoops app, a free app to help your players measure the trajectory and arc of their shot. They'll get immediate feedback after every make or miss so that they can course correct and become a better shooter faster. Have your players download the Hoops app at thehoopsapp.com/PGC today so that you can have a team full of better shooters next season.
Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle. Sam and Lisa and myself today, we're going to talk about evaluation. And evaluation is such a big part of the game. It doesn't matter whether you're evaluating an eighth grader or if you're evaluating to recruit a player. But, you know, evaluating players is a big decision you have to make on a daily basis to be able to help them. Also, evaluating your games, evaluating your practices, evaluating your staff. Constantly evaluating allows you to grow and to get better. So in today's episode, we're going to break it down into four different parts. We're going to talk about evaluation of games, evaluation of practices, evaluation of players, and evaluation of staff. And we're just, you know, going to be able to hit the highest points here and dive into some things that might help you with your own evaluation. So let's talk about evaluating games first. I was reading a quote yesterday. I think it's from Rick Majerus, but I don't remember exactly how it went, but it was something along the line, the hardest thing to do in coaching is keep it simple. And it made me think a lot about just coaching in general. What do I complicate? And I think this is one of those things in game evaluation that I do think as a staff, we should do a deep dive into evaluation. But I think really what you evaluate for your players, so like what comes out on the front end might need to be different because I think it can be overload. I think this is another place where we can do way too much where we give the players, here's the 52 things we learned from the game. And that's just a lot. And so I think the best kind of filling the feedback loop and making sure that it's all tied in is we might know all this stuff as coaches, but what do the players need to know? And here's what I think the players need to know. I think they need to know how you're doing with the things you're emphasizing. So if you have three main things that you do, let's just say that you really value shot selection, you value winning the glass, and you value not turning the ball over. Like, I think a lot of your feedback, that's what you should be working on in practice, and then they should be getting graded in the game on how they're doing and watching clips. But I think in general, a lot of times as coaches, we'll go back and, will you see this? If you had a 2-foot jump stop here, you'd have been fine. Will you see this? If you had a shot fake here, you would have been fine. Will you see this? And all of a sudden we give them 100 different things over the course of the game. And it's not wrong to go back and evaluate an individual player and help them work on their game. I think that's good feedback for the individual player. But I think sometimes those film sessions where you pick out the two things Anna did wrong and the three things Shelby did wrong and the four things Lisa did wrong, and you show all of this film, I think that becomes just jumbled to the player. Sam, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think a lot of it depends on how what age and stage you're coaching, right? So the higher level, you know, the college level, you're looking at what your team needs. I think you're looking at some offense, defense. I think good coaches are evaluating culture in games. Like when I say culture, Lisa and TJ, I'm talking about, you might notice a couple players playing selfishly on offense. You might notice your bench not having much energy. Like, I think you're evaluating those type of things. I think at a younger level, you're just identifying what what habits are you seeing exposed and revealed in games, so you can go back to practice and work on them, on those things. And I think you're doing that obviously at a higher level too. Because I think it really just comes down to habits across the board, and the games do reveal what habits you've been working on in practice. And are those habits aligned with what you want to get done? And so I think that's how I look at it from a really high level. I got some more micro thoughts, but those are higher level thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think age and stage really is important. Like, I'm coaching my eighth grade daughter's team. I've mentioned this before. And there's like recently, this last tournament, I wrote down on my hand so I can remember it easily. I wrote it down on my hand when I was coaching the three things that we were going to focus on. And I try to tell them before the game. And I told them in practice, and these are things we're working on, and we're going to work on our transition defense. So we're not going to give up layups. So we're not going to give up breakaway layups. Everyone's going to hustle back. We're going to know who's getting back, because I think it's a big part of, you know, winning the game, but also just getting your defensive set so we can work on all the things we're working on defense. So transition defense. And on the offensive end, we're going to work on being ball strong, like just not letting people get into our bubble and using a dribble to pierce the defense a little bit. Like all the things that we did in practice, we'll take care of the ball. And third, we want to be it clear that we're the hardest playing team out there. So intangibles. And so those are the three things we're going to focus on. And, you know, next tournament, we might pick three other things to focus on. Maybe one or two stays the same, but we're going to pick some different things to focus on. So I think that's right. I think that I really think, because at that age, we're focusing on development, right? And when you go into like Sam and or Lisa and I, like we're coaching college teams, there's an element of development, but honestly, the bottom line is kind of win. Like, you got to find a way to win. So what we evaluate might be a little bit, even though the two things aren't mutually exclusive, you do have to develop your players, which will lead to wins. You know, they've got to get better at this habit and that habit. It's not different. We just might have a few more of them. We might have more analytics. We might have different things that we're going into to focus on. You guys got any more follow-up thoughts on game?
Well, I do have one on what you just said. Like, I think it's important for coaches listening. You said those three things: transition D, ball strong, and be the hardest playing team. And then you said, hey, next tournament, we may move on to three more. I'm assuming you're saying that because if you executed really well on those three, you're going to assume, okay, we got a baseline of expectation there. Now we need to level up. But if you hadn't done those three things well, I'm assuming you wouldn't move on to three more because we haven't hit the baseline of that. Is that fair to say?
Well, I don't know if I would do that. I think that's one way you could go about it. Like, I think you could put your whole season on, like, you know, week one, we work on this. Week two, we level it up. And by week four, you know, of our summer tournament, we're great at those three things. You could do that. I think that I probably wouldn't go three new ones every single week. But at the same time, I want to expose them to other points of emphasis to see how they do, because they're developing as players, you know? And so it might be the next week that maybe we change ball strong to aggressive drives. Like, I just want them to be aggressive, putting the ball on the floor. No banana drives, you know, where you're looping around. Let's just try and focus on that. And it's not because we mastered ball strong. It's just because I've only got them for 8 weeks, and we might just want to work on something else in their player development journey besides what's just going to help us win that weekend. And so it could be either or. You could be leveling up, or you could be just changing the focus to try and develop them in another place.
Yeah, and I would also, thinking about that, because I was having a conversation with a couple parents of kids of mine this weekend, TJ and Lisa, and some of the kids I'm coaching younger level right now, like they can't do multiple things. Like, when you give them too much stuff, they freeze up. And so you narrow the focus. And I think we talk about that a lot, but I don't know, the more, to be honest, in basketball, you have to do a lot of things. There is so much going on defense. You got to guard the ball. Then you got to be in help. Then you might have to rotate. Then you got to box out on offense. You got to know what to do without the ball, what to do without the ball, when to cut, when to stand, when to fill, when to space. Like, the reality is, in basketball, it's so dynamic. And so it is important as a basketball coach to pick where you're going to focus. Whereas in another sport, in football, if you're a wide receiver, you really get to narrow your focus or your alignment. Like really the quarterback is the one position that's so dynamic. Or in baseball, I think about, okay, when I'm on offense, what do? I got to hit a baseball. Like I got to focus on hitting. And then when I'm on defense, I'm either playing first base or outfield. Like it's a lesser or a more narrow focus in other sports. And I'm just using those two. I don't know. Like soccer, I think it's all that way too. And similar to basketball. So I don't know. What am I trying to say here? I'm saying this. Narrowing the focus is a good thing. Yes. And it's challenging in basketball because it's so dynamic and evaluating, back to our conversation, you're evaluating games. Like there's a lot going on and you got to decide what you're going to evaluate.
Yeah. Let's bleed this into players. So we're going to talk about evaluating players as well and games, because I think there's some carryover here too. So we can kind of go both with games and players. I know what you're saying. I think this is really important. I actually think this is where coaches earn their money. I think this is where good coaches create separation. And, you know, when we're going through players, I'm going to give you another example I'm not trying to talk about my daughter the whole time, but just give examples. So people, it might be relevant to them, you know, eighth grader, they're working on this, but I also find this relevant to my college players too. You know, weekend one we played and my daughter really works on her skills and she does a great job of like probably working harder than most eighth graders I've ever met. But her skills don't always translate in the game. And I, as a coach, I'm trying to figure out why they're not always translating. You know, why is this not happening? And going back to your point, Sam, of like all of this multiple things happening, I think that slows her down because thinking wise, she's not the fastest thinker. She's a processor. I'm going to do A, I'm going to do B, I'm going to do C, right? And this can be very easy for a coach to gloss over that if you don't know each individual player, like if you can't evaluate a player. But I'm trying to solve the problem for each little, you know, eighth graders I got. I'm trying to solve a problem that will make them better as a player, right? I don't know. So I'm talking about my daughter's problem, but each of them has a different one. There's another girl on the team, good player, you know, but she's turning it over a ton. How do I simplify this and make her more effective so she can grow? So I'll give you the example of Bella, like a really good shooter. She's working on her drives, passes, jump stop, all this other stuff. So weekend one, you know, we play three games and she scores like seven, maybe one game and eight, another game and, you know, another game, you know, six or nine. I don't know. All kind of around those spots, you know, and doesn't hit a three in any of those games, but she's a really good shooter. And so I'm like, gosh, you know, what do we do about this? So then the next weekend I said, listen, what do you do best? She's like, I'm a shooter. And I said, okay. I don't want you to drive the ball at all this weekend very much. I want you to concentrate on getting your feet set and hitting open threes. So in weekend two, she hits four threes, six threes, and five threes in the three games. And so going back to your point, Sam, she stopped trying to like drive and create and do all this stuff. She just kind of locked into what she did and it narrowed the focus for her. And it's like this light bulb went on. She was through the roof excited. You know, she got like a breakaway layup, a couple foul shots, things like that. So she ends up scoring like, you know, near 20 a game. But it was that simple factor of narrowing the focus. Now, she can't do that forever, but it definitely did help for a weekend. Lisa, what are your thoughts on that?
TJ, I think that's right in terms of just especially in player development, helping young players see where they can be successful and think about one thing. I think that's really hard. Like even you think about young girls are leaving basketball. Well, why are they leaving basketball at a young age? Because one, they're getting tempted to play other sports, but also basketball is just so dynamic. It's a lot coming at them at once. It's hard to get good at it. The skills are hard. Shooting is just, and dribbling and having your eyes up. All these things are technical. So we can make it not fun. You know, and we can make it defeating if we don't name the win. And so I think whether it's games or practices or player development, like what is the win for this player? What is the win for our team? And I think that sets the standard for everybody, because then it's like, I know what I'm working towards. And then at the end, that's what I want feedback on. And sometimes we give them feedback on 10 different things. And that feels really bad when, you know, especially if you were trying to narrow my focus on the one or two things. And then I hear out, I didn't do 5, 6, or 7 very well. I think as coaches, we can do that with our teams, you know, thinking about games, thinking about player development or whatever, marrying those two, but just giving them feedback on everything, because we have to find a reason why we lost. And that's where, you know, what we're giving them or how we're naming the win or the standard that we're setting is regardless of the outcome. And that's where as coaches, we have to understand what does our team need right now and pivot and like put that on, like we should carry that burden and not the player.
Yeah. And I think it really helps, especially when you're in the development ages. Like I think this is why the development of basketball players in America struggles so much, is because we're just so captivated by winning, you know? And if you're like, I am invested in these girls' development as players, I'm fully recognized. And maybe it's easier for me because I know I'm going to be judged on every game as a college coach, right? Like that I can just step back and have a little bit of fun with these girls and totally invest in their development. And so maybe other coaches, that is their world. You know, they come in and I got to win this weekend and I got to do whatever. You want to have the girls to have success. But I tell the girls all the time, listen, I want you to have a great high school career. And I want you to do, here's the things that are going to help you. So we spend a lot of time on the intangibles, right? Because I want them to be great teammates. I want them to, all the things that will help them enjoy their career. And then I want them to develop skills and things that will help them enjoy their high school career, get better. Maybe it's they weren't ever going to play till they got some minutes, or they went from a sixth person to a starter, or they became a college player eventually. I don't know. Everybody's got a different level. But when I look at it from that perspective, I feel like it's easier for me to help people develop their game. And I think that creates, like you were talking about, Lisa, more joy, right? Like the better they get. I mean, I remember this. I've said, you remember Dr. Epling, Sam. I mean, this was my college professor, and I took away one teaching more than anything else. It was this, like the more a person develops their skills in a thing, the more they enjoy it, the more they enjoy it, the longer they're likely to do it. And so that goes to anything, like just teaching youth sport. Like I was a PE class. Like if you have pickleball class in PE, help them develop their skills. And as they grow and as they get better, they're going to enjoy it more. And the more they enjoy it, the longer they're going to do it. I think that's true of our youth as well, like helping them develop whatever those things are. And those types of things, honestly, directly help your team. And I think coaches lose sight of that. So like I have another girl on our team. Struggles like her shot, and she's so focused on her shot and all these things. I said, listen, here's what I want you to do. I want you to run the floor harder than any other post out there and just concentrate on trying to make layups. And then I want you to be the best offensive rebounder. I don't want you to shoot any shots today. And so she went out there and she got like 14 points just running ahead of the group and getting layups. And she was fighting for every offensive rebound. She was doing, and I was like, how do you feel? She's like, I feel great. And I'm like, how many jump shots did you miss or make? She's like, I didn't take any. You told me not to. And I said, you understand that's just a small part of the game. You can really affect the game and the team by doing these types of things. And she felt good about that. And I think that's a big part of helping player development is for them to feel good. Like you alluded to a second ago, Lisa, not everything that's wrong, but with coaches, what are we always doing? Well, you do this better. You need to do this better. You need to do that better. And I think that does steal a little bit of the joy, and players feel like they are never winning at anything. And I think it's crucial to help them find wins. Sam, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's a good story, TJ, about the girl you told, hey, just you narrowed her focus. And that is where the value of narrowing the focus comes. And like you said, a lot of coaches are so focused on winning that they lose sight of some of the developmental pieces. I would argue, like, you guys are college coaches, but I would argue development stage is forever. It's college is a developmental, pro is a developmental. Yes, winning matters a lot at those levels. I do think you're right. When you become more skilled, you have more fun. When you have more fun, you want to go back. When you go back, you get more skilled. When you get more skilled, it's a cyclical thing. And we as coaches got to keep that in mind. And we got to keep that in mind and make sure we're living that out.
Well, I think the thing that I said earlier too, that I really believe in, they're not mutually exclusive, like you just alluded to, Sam.
Yeah.
You know, like the player development piece of it, I think a lot of times coaches think I'm going to win more games if I run a better offense. I'm going to win more games if I change this X's and O's thing. I think you actually have a better shot at winning more games the more you develop those players, the more you get them in the roles, the more they go after little wins. Like, it just doesn't seem like it's going to change everything. But I actually think it is the thing that changes everything, is when players do sometimes narrow their focus, get great at something, then they expand to something else. And then you're constantly leveling up your players. And then all of a sudden, guess what? Your systems and strategies look a little bit better. You know, everything goes. And so I really don't think we put enough emphasis on this. And when we think about, you know, what do we need to do to level them up? It's what we're talking about on this topic. We have to be good evaluators. You know, in our track and in our PGC tracks, we're doing player development. And one of the seven best practices we've got is diagnosing and prescribing. Coaches diagnose and prescribe players well. Like, if you can do that, you're going to level up your team. And a big part of that is evaluating. If you can, I mean, diagnosing a player is the same as evaluating a player. If you're not good at diagnosing players, right, it's really hard to help them. And the second part of that, prescribing the right things. And I mess up all the time, right? But this particular weekend, I just felt great about my coaching. I really did, because I felt like I was diagnosing and prescribing well for these young ladies. They saw the improvement. You know, our team went from the bad news bears in week one to all of a sudden winning games. It was like this drastic turnaround. We didn't change anything X's and O's wise. We just kind of narrowed the focus. We diagnosed some things. We prescribed some things. And then everybody did a little bit better in their role. And therefore, the team did better. And I think that that's something you got to do all the time. And the third one we'll talk about is in practice. And I think these all kind of tie together. But let's say that you're evaluating well. What are the things that you're doing evaluating in practice, and how does that tie into player development in games? Sam, I want to get your thought on that. Like, how are you going about evaluating practices to ensure growth for your team?
That's a big question. First off, in our practices, I'd evaluate what's the, and we, you know, TJ, we were doing a call last night about this, like how you set the tone in practice, like before you ever hit the floor. And so it starts there. Like, are we engaged in the right way? I want my kids that I coach to love coming to practice. I love it when we get to the end of practice and I blow the whistle and they all come in center circle and I tell them practice is over. And they're like, what? Like, they can't believe it. Like, time flew by. They want to keep going. They were having so much fun. Like, those are the best practices, especially at a younger level. And I would imagine at the college level too. Like, so I'm getting away maybe from a little bit of where you're trying to go on that, but I think that's important. Like, if, and by the way, fun and focus can go together. And so we get after it, man. Like, we work really hard. We compete. We do a lot of competing. We do a fair amount of drill work. But we want to have fun. So that's how I evaluate practice. Are we getting better and are we having fun? There's culture pieces to that. There's X's and O's to that. There's skills that we work every day on finishing. We work every day on catch and shoots, being shot ready. We work every day on moving without the ball and passing. And then we work every day on defense. Now, did I answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, in a roundabout way, you answered the question. I think what I would narrow down to what you said, maybe to put it in fewer words, is like, what is Sam evaluating in practice? I mean, effort and energy, you know, that seems like a something that you're really passionate about in practice. You know, skill development, are they getting better in their skills? Here's my thought on practice, is that you need to know going into it what you are evaluating. Because if you go into practice and you don't have a plan or a structure to what you're evaluating, and Sam, even though you didn't hit the points, in the back of your head, you know what you're evaluating. Like, are players playing hard enough? Are they being great teammates? Are they working hard at their skills? Like, if you leave practice and you felt like it was great effort, great energy, and hard work at their skills, you would feel like it was a good practice.
Yeah.
Right. And I think a lot of coaches, sometimes we go in there and we put down a practice plan, 3 minutes on this, 7 minutes on that, 9 minutes on that, rebounding check, shooting check. We check all of those boxes. So is that how you evaluate your practice? Oh, we checked all the boxes. I would argue that doesn't equal growth. That doesn't equal a better basketball team. What equals a better basketball team is, here are the three things at the end of practice that we know we should have a grade on, or we should be able to look at and say, this went okay, this went well, however you want to evaluate or grade your practices. But it's hard to evaluate your practices if you don't know beforehand what the goal is and what you should be evaluating at the end.
Going back to the diagnose and prescribe thing, along with what you're saying, like, I think a lot of coaches, TJ and Lisa, I think they prescribe the wrong medicine because they've diagnosed the wrong problems. And so they went to the wrong pharmacy. They gave them the wrong drugs. And now we're treating the wrong symptoms. So I'll say this. I'm going into practice this week. I just coached this past weekend. And in my evaluation of the game, I think we did a lot of good things. Okay, I coached three teams. One thing that I realize I'm not pleased with is this. I think our kids need to be better teammates, and I think they need to be better leaders. This week in practice will be big on being a great teammate and how to be a better leader. I've done a poor job in teaching them how to lead each other better, both in games and in practices. So we're going to talk and work a lot on drill work, competitive work, how to lead one another, how to communicate, how to give reminders. We talk about that at PGC a lot. So we're going to work a lot on that. And then we're going to talk a lot about being a great teammate, because when you get into games, the car ride over, that seventh grade kid was told by his dad or mom, shoot more, be more aggressive, score more. And they're getting fed a lot of that. And they're breaking down the structure of our team. And so I see in games, Lisa and TJ, kids getting very frustrated with themselves, very upset when they miss a layup or they miss a shot, because they've put it on a pedestal. They've put scoring on a pedestal. And so I don't think they're inherently selfish, but I think the culture breeds selfishness. So I've got to work on, you know, being a great teammate. And guess what that does? That allows you to remove all the focus of yourself so that you can have more fun because you're enjoying it with a team. So that's my diagnosis, and that'll be my prescription this week.
Well, let's talk about the evaluation part, like what we're talking about on this. So Sam, what are you going to do to evaluate that? Yeah, because I think this is the big, and what more importantly than what are you going to do to evaluate it? What are they going to do to evaluate it? Because really it matters more what they think about it. And when I think about going into a practice like that, let's just all brainstorm here some ideas of things that you would do. And depending on the age and stage, you know, I can envision a 4-on-4 defensive drill with four people on the baseline, and the four people on the baseline are strictly evaluating their communication, leadership, and teamwork on the defensive end. And they're going to, after they get done trying their seven stops or whatever, I'm just making something up, then they're going to get feedback from their teammates. So it's being evaluated in the moment before it gets forgotten. And then maybe at the halfway point of practice, we stop and we say, everybody hold up your fingers on a scale of 1 to 10. How do you feel like you're doing being a great teammate today or whatever? Okay, well, let's level this thing. You know, at the end of practice, what are the things you and your staff are looking for to say, hey, we know we got better at this? And I think that really helps. What are some other thoughts and ideas so that you can actually evaluate the practice really well at the end to make sure Sam hits these targets? Lisa, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think one thing is like your success rate in whatever you're doing, right? So like your shooting, your offensive focus, your defensive focus. Defense is a little bit different because you usually shoot a certain percentage, but what should it be? And I think that's a lot of times we don't have that number and we just go off of the feel, and maybe we just evaluate what our top five players doing, but we want to have that balance of how much challenge they're experiencing and how much success versus failure they're experiencing. And so like whatever drill it is set up to, like, what's the goal in this drill and is it the right goal? And you know, sometimes we walk away being like, oh, we met the goal for all of our drills and all of our games. We played a game and this is the outcome. And we don't really think about if we were intentional setting that up beforehand. And also just the, you know, is 50% right? Like, because if they're winning all the time, or if they're making all of their shots, or they're always taking the right shots, then are they actually learning? Are they experiencing that failure of, okay, here, I got myself in a challenging situation. I took the wrong one. Okay, now I'm learning how to take the right one in this situation. Or are we setting it up and it's too easy for them to be successful, so that doesn't mimic the game, when all of a sudden in the game, now we're taking bad shots or missing all these shots again, or we can't, you know, keep anybody in front of us. And so you just think, like, I was watching something with Doug Lamov, who, you know, we appreciate teaching coaches how to be better, but like he had a coach that they did the drill, and all the coach was doing was getting, because I think it was just one coach, taking data on how they did, you know, what was their number? Okay, this was, and so he wasn't giving a bunch of feedback during the drill, but after the drill, he said, hey, okay, this is where we're at. And he had information to give his team on where, you know, when they missed or when they failed and why they failed. And that's really helpful. That was a really good debrief for that drill. And sometimes we just don't have that. How often were they successful? Were we close to our number? Like, I think that just really helps players know where they're at, and if they're trending in the right direction. So like, how do we as coaches identify those numbers, or just that correct data, so we don't go off of feel all the time?
Yeah, well, sometimes with intangibles, I think people think it's all feel, but it doesn't have to be all feel. So let's go back to Sam's practice here for a second. Those four players on the back defensively, they're gauging. Okay, so Sam tells those four players before the drill starts, all right, here's the three things I want you to watch for. I want you to count the number of times they give high fives. I want you to count the times they give good instruction to a teammate, like leadership-wise. I want you to count the times they give reminders before they actually do something they shouldn't do, whatever. Well, I'm just making some up. But so the person on the baseline says, all right, at the end of it, all right, you four players come over here, and all of a sudden you'd be shocked if you actually track this stuff. Well, we were hoping for five high fives from each player, which equals 20. One player gave three, one player gave one, the other two gave none. We're at four, right? Okay, no, listen, we're working on leadership. We're working on intangibles. There are ways to do that type of stuff. And I think this is, again, where coaches can really earn their money. This is a way of actually tangibly or intangibly giving them feedback. One player gave, this is always eye-opening to us. You know, we did this last year. KJ is an All-American, pro, whatever. We finished practice and he led us in high fives by like a long slide. He was like 55 high fives. The next guy was like 22 or whatever. And everyone was 8, 7 or whatever. And it was a real good teachable moment. One, we had data on it. You know, we were able to tell him that. And that was over the course of a practice, but it could be over the course of a drill as well. Just real simple. Like, you know, you don't have the resources. You don't have a coach tracking that like we do. You've got the four players on the baseline tracking the high fives. You look at it, you go to those numbers, and the lesson at the end of practice is, here's an evaluation of the energy that you brought or the leadership you brought. Here's where we're at. Now, KJ, yeah, I get it. He's a great player. I get it. He's super skilled. But there's no reason any of the other 12 players, you couldn't have beat him in high fives. And so then you evaluate the next day. You're hoping people are closer to his number or beating him. Well, now you know you've got better teammates. You've got people that are spending, going out of their way. They're thinking about the things that you want them to think about. And that's improvement for your team. Sam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I like this discussion. I think it starts with defining what a great teammate is with your players. That can be the coach giving the definition. And I haven't decided on my practice plan for tomorrow night when I'm going to do this, but I may have a discussion with them. Hey, we're going to focus on leadership and teammates. What do you think would be, I would ask them, like, what if we were measuring you being a good teammate, what do y'all think would happen? And then I would solicit answers from them, and we might pick three of the 10 they give, and then we're going to measure those things. To your point, TJ, there, like, this would be one I would use. When we score a bucket, do we acknowledge the passer every time? And let's say it's an unassisted bucket. Well, if Jackson drove it in and got a layup, maybe he got the layup because Caden was spaced in the corner and his man, the help side never came. So we acknowledge Caden, who did a good job spacing. Like, that's one thing we're going to do. Here's the second thing, leadership. We'll do stuff where, and I see, we do this a lot, but we're going to double down on it this week, is how we go out and do drill work. And we do some footwork stuff where we're working a shot fake or a jab and go. And it's detailed. It's simple, but it's detailed. And we go out, when you're with 6th and 7th graders, you might have 6 out of 10 that do the proper footwork and the 4 that don't. Well, I'm gonna make sure that our players are holding each other accountable. And I don't think, TJ and Lisa, most players approach a drill like a coach. So if I can give ownership to my players in that drill work and they take pride in it, I think that's leadership. I think that's a tangible thing that we can do. What do y'all think about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think your practice is going to be a lot better because me and Lisa are helping you through this. And I'm serious, your plan's going to be solid. No, I'm just playing. But I think this conversation we're having is what coaches need to be thinking about.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, I think that, and this is where I think coaches can really help coaches. As we're talking through these things, all of us are probably getting ideas on how we could level up some of the things that we want to level up based on what are we going to evaluate at the end. And so, you know, Sam knows he wants to go in there and do all of, you know, I want to be better teammates. I want to be, you know, better leaders. I want to, okay, all right, now, what am I going to evaluate in that? So listen, we've been going for a while. We could go on this forever, but there's a fourth one I just want to bring into the fold, right? Because we talked a little bit about games. We've talked about players. We've talked about evaluating practices, but also staff. And like to Sam's point earlier, I think even all of this stuff is cyclical, right? Like when you're humming, when your team is headed in the right direction, then you're evaluating all of these things. Like you're evaluating your staff, your players, your games, you're evaluating all this stuff on a regular basis so that you can improve it the next day, the next week, the next month. And so what role does staff play in this? You know, what role do they play in making sure not just the evaluation part, but you actually evaluating them or group-wide staff? Everyone has different ways of evaluating staff. Sometimes the head coach comes in and tells, you know, the assistant. Sometimes you sit in a room in 360 and everybody evaluates each other. I prefer, and we do both, to be honest with you. There's times we're time crunched and I'll give my assistants feedback. And there's times I like to sit down and say, hey, what did you like? What did you not like? What could I have done better? Let's give each other some feedback in this room. But Lisa, I'm going to start with you. What do you think are some keys to evaluating staff?
Well, I think it's similar to what we're saying with players, is like naming the win for them. Like, do they have clarity in their role? What are they supposed to be bringing? When are they going to be leading? Are you setting them up for success? How, you know, what are their strengths? And I think then it's one, are they building trust and doing those things really well? And then are they, you know, learning how to anticipate your needs or the needs of the program? And so you might have to mentor them in growth areas, obviously. But I think another one that's just really important is just, are you aligned as a staff? If, let's say you go, you know, we have these three areas that we're trying to get better at in practice. Are we making sure that everybody knows what they are, how they can serve that best? I think we a lot of times assume we've communicated things, but say it again, remind them. And then if you go into practice and everybody's has their own three things, or everybody's coaching 17 things, and is that really alignment? Is that what you want? And maybe you do want that. Maybe you just want everybody contributing. You know, I think you have to name that win though, cast a vision for them and set them up for success. I think then you can go on evaluating them properly. Because I think it's the same thing with player development. We can name all the things our staff's doing wrong or could be better in, but it's overwhelming to try to be better at 10 things right away or 10 things in a day. And so yeah, maybe it's just one thing you're having them focus on. So just trying to help us, you know, be in our sweet spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I think about this as we're talking about Sam's practice coming up, right? Like, so let's just say Sam's got 2 or 3 helpers in there. And going in there, like, what could Sam do to help them win at practice and also easily evaluate them at the end of practice? I think what you talked about, Lisa, is narrow their focus. Hey, listen, Sam could say, today I'm leading practice with the sole emphasis of leadership and being great teammates. So what I want you guys to highlight and encourage all day long is this. So if anybody has a great, does a great job of leading, like, I want you to celebrate the heck out of it. If anybody does a great job of being, I want you to celebrate the heck out of it. If you notice somebody's dipping and they're not being a great teammate, I want you to call them aside and remind them the focus of practice today is this. And hey, it seems like you're a little down, you're a little struggling. And Sam could give them that feedback before, but how much better is your practice at the end of the day if everybody's focused on the same thing, right? Because that where practices can go wrong is where, and I think assistant coaches, like, sometimes shouldn't take this the wrong way, but do, you know, because I trust my assistant coaches and I trust that they could probably pick out 50 things that are going wrong in practice, but that doesn't necessarily serve them. And I'm not trying to limit them by narrowing their focus. I'm just trying to keep us all going and pushing in the same direction. Because if I'm focused on this player's leadership, and Graham's focused on his ball handling, and Paul's focused on his shooting, you know, and so we go on down the road and everybody's focused on something different, are we really helping that player as much as possible? But if I'm leading the group, like Sam will be in his next practice on leadership and being a great teammate, and he has three people in the gym doing the same focus, and maybe even he recruits his two people that got it down pat, maybe he's got two players on his team that are great leaders and great teammates, let them know you're a part of the staff today. Like, you're doing everything we're doing, but you're on the team of, let's get everybody on the bus in the right seat, go in the right direction. You're part of that leadership group today. And now he's got seven people pulling, trying to get everybody focused on leadership and teamwork. You're going to accomplish a lot more like that. And also go back to the point of what we're talking about. At the end, it's easier to evaluate, because you have seven people with eyes on what you're trying to accomplish. Everybody knows the focus of practice. Everybody knows what the team needs most. And so at the end, you can look into those two things and evaluate them well. Sam, what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on that, hearing you say that, is that you will sacrifice in other areas. When we focus on leadership and teammate, we're giving up some other areas. And we have to be okay with that. And I don't think many coaches get okay with that. And so to your point, they become jack of all trades, master of none, and we don't really get better. We thought we got better because we checked the box and we had on our practice plan, but in reality, we didn't get better. So, Nair, I think I might be countering what I said earlier in the podcast, that there's a lot you got to work on, but I do believe in the narrowed focus and the less is more, and that is true. And hey, I would also lastly maybe say this, like, Jesus didn't have 40 disciples. He had 12. And so as a coach, sometimes if you have a team of 12, you might need to go heavy into three of your players or two of them and really develop them so that they can then develop, you know, the four or the six players that they're leading. And I think that's good leadership, I think.
Yeah. And so we've circled the wagons on probably 100 ideas over the course of this episode, but I want to go back to the main point of, you got to know if you're winning or losing, right? And all of these things. And what Sam just talked about there, the jack of all trades, you can't do that. It's really hard to evaluate if you don't know what you're evaluating. So when I think about going into a staff meeting, it's not fair of me to pick apart everything that they've done right or wrong if they don't know what a win looks like, right? It's no different with your players. It's really hard to evaluate those players. Now, they don't have to know all the stuff your coaches do, but they do need to know generally what direction they're going and what they're trying to be successful at. It's easier to evaluate them. It's easier to streamline the conversation when you're on the same page as your players. Same thing as practice. You go into practice, and if everybody knows what you're trying to get better at, what the focuses are, then at the end of practice, you can evaluate, did we do those three things? I mean, imagine a practice starts like this. Here are the three things we're trying to get better at today. We're trying to build our individual teammates. Like, we want you to be better teammates. We want to be better in transition defense, and we want to take care of the ball better. At the end of practice, I'm going to ask you how we did at that. Throughout practice, I'm going to check with you to see how you think you're doing at that, what you've learned from that, what you're focused on. And if you go back to players and you're like, hey, what are you focused on? I'm focused on my jumper. All right. Not today. You're not. No. We're focused on something else today. And the same thing with games, and they all build up and lead to the same thing. But imagine a team, and this is the final thing that I'll say. I was in a gym this weekend watching AAU games, and we were in a civic center or whatever it is with 15 courts, right? So there's 15 different games going on at a time. And I'm watching this, you know, for a couple hours, and I was walking from court to court, and maybe once an hour at looking at 15 games, I could tell what a team had been focused on and working at. Now, it's not that there's a lot of good players out there. There was good things going on out there. People playing hard. I'm not bashing. Like, there's a lot of those things. But every once in a while, I could walk around and I could look at a team and say, whoa, there's something different about this team. And that, you think about that. So that's what, 30 teams an hour, 4 hours. We're looking at 120 teams. I think that's about accurate. I could look at 3 or 4 teams over the course of that day and say, there's something different about this team. That's not to say the other 116 were bad teams or bad coaches or bad effort or anything. No, I'm not saying that. They did good things. A lot of teams did good things. But there was 3 or 4 teams over the course of the day that looked different than everybody else. And I think at the end of the day, what you want for your team is for people to clearly know what they stand for and what they're about. Whether that's the intangibles, whether that's the offensive end, whether that's the defensive end, whatever it is, I think you will be happier with your team if you and everyone else knows what they are clearly about. And that's hard to do if you don't have an evaluation plan in place. Because if what you're getting done is getting celebrated, if what you're getting done is getting evaluated every day, everybody's going to be pulling in the same direction, and you're much more likely to create better players and a better team. So, Sam, Lisa, let me get y'all's parting thoughts on that as we wrap up the evaluation episode.
Just, I think our leadership in this realm is really crucial to our success and how we cast a vision for our team, because whether or not we're winning games or losing games, this goes beyond that. Because if we're winning games, we still want to grow. And if we're losing games, we want to keep growing. And so this, I think, names the wind. It gives an opportunity for success beyond the scoreboard. And this is just in what we're doing, especially basketball wise. And so it's really important because it sets the tone. It creates an environment of growth. It creates a constant focus that we all can be better than we were yesterday. And so it just takes the emphasis off of the outcome. And I think that's really important, but it's also just comes from us. And so how we're doing in this area as a leader, as a coach, as a head coach is really important that we spend some time in being intentional about it.
Experience doesn't make us better. Evaluated experience does. And so evaluation matters a lot. Diagnosing and prescribing matter a lot in coaching. TJ, your point on watching the AAU games, I think, is a really important one. And so then I think about what, why, and how. Okay, what are we trying to do? What have we clearly defined it? So define the what, get clear on the why, and then know how you're going to go live it out. And then through that process, you got to remind yourself back to the why. And remind yourself why, and remind yourself why, and then get define the what, and then know how you're doing it. Like, I just think that's so important as a leader and a coach. And we're going to fall short, and we're not going to hit it right every time. But I think that process does, over the long haul, set you up for more success.
Yeah. So, coaches, quit being frustrated because of all the things that aren't happening. And lock in, build out some evaluation plans so that you can make sure that you're headed in a direction. Don't be a boat out to sea, just floating, wondrously going whatever direction. Get a compass, and it's a direction to go, and evaluation is a necessary part of that. So love to hear your thoughts. Hit us up at Hardwood_Hustle. She is Lisa, he is Sam, and I am TJ. We are the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. If you're interested in one of our coaching clinics, diving into one of our coaching tracks, or simply joining our PGC coaching community, go to pgccoaching.com to find the support you've been looking for in all aspects of your coaching. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.